Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday night, March 5th, 2020. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and I think, if you don't mind, I think I want to start with the Big East, because we have a fascinating situation in the Big East heading into the final weekend of the regular season. But first, let's back up. On Wednesday night, Seton Hall had an opportunity to secure its first outright Big East title since 1993. All the Pirates had to do, beat Villanova at home. They were 3.5-point favorites, so the odds were in their favor. But then Villanova made 13 three-pointers and upset Seton Hall. Final score, Wildcats 79, Pirates 77 inside the Herb Pope Center. And when you combine that result with Creighton's win over Georgetown, the Big East standings now look like this. Seton Hall, 13-4. Creighton, 12-5. Villanova, 12-5. And if you look ahead to this weekend, Seton Hall is at Creighton on Saturday. Villanova is at Georgetown. So if the favorites win both games, in other words, if Creighton beats Seton Hall and Villanova beats Georgetown, Seton Hall, Creighton, and Villanova will all finish 13-5 in the Big East, and we'll have co-champions times three. Norlander, it's prediction time.
Yes.
Who wins the Big East? It's a multiple choice situation. Is it A, Seton Hall outright, B, Seton Hall and Creighton, co-champs, or C, Seton Hall, Creighton, and Villanova, three-way tie at the top?
The answer is C, and what you may not realize, because you didn't detail it there in your intro where you lay it all out, how about this? If Nova wins against Georgetown, which is going to happen, and then if Creighton can win at home against Seton Hall, that would mean, unbelievably, while they'd all have the same record in terms of seeding and tiebreakers, when the Big East tournament starts, Creighton would be the one, Villanova would be the two, and Seton Hall, which has been in the driver's spot for 2+ months in this conference and was the preseason pick to be the best team in the league, would actually be the three seed once we got to Madison Square Garden. I'll be there next week for the Big East tournament. That would be an unexpected turn of events in the broad picture, but I think heading into the weekend, I do think that's where we're going to end up. All three of those teams, same record. You with me?
No.
Okay.
I've got Seton Hall winning at Creighton and being the outright Big East champs for the first time since 1993, back when they were led by a young man named Terry DeHare.
No.
Yes,
I'm pretty sure that's a character in a children's book I read to my kids.
Terry DeHare is a real person.
Terry DeHare?
He scored 22 points per game.
Oh, my goodness. Who was the second best player on that Seton Hall team?
I don't know that.
That's all I need to know. Okay, fair enough.
But I do know who the little sophomore point guard was that averaged 6 points and 3 assists per game.
Okay, go ahead.
Trivia time, you go ahead.
I got no idea here, okay? I wasn't locked into Trenton hoops back in 93.
Dan Hurley.
Oh, shame on me. Shame on me. Dan Hurley and his UConn Huskies getting the win over Houston on Thursday night, making the Cougars sweat a little bit heading into postseason play, and UConn might be the spoiler of the American Athletic Conference. Full disclosure here, just so our listeners realize this, we are recording this on Thursday night, so you got this podcast well in advance of its typical Friday placement. We hope you enjoy that, but for the benefit of our schedules and hopefully yours, that's why you're getting this, and we are doing this before Memphis-Wichita State will conclude. So while I mentioned the American there, nice job, a nice win out of UConn on senior night, and a pretty big Wichita State-Memphis game, but we won't know the ending of that before the pod's done. But GP's Tigers and my Shockers certainly going at it, and loser might be a default elimination game. As for the Big East, real quick, so I'm going to be there next week. I'm super excited. I was actually It's funny you mentioned this because we were talking before the pod, what we wanted to start with, what we wanted to chat on, and you had mentioned the Big East, and I was all about it because coincidentally just earlier in the day I'd had to call Mr. Jay Billis for something, and I said, are you going to be at the ACC tournament? And he said, yeah, where are you going to be? I said, I'm going to bounce back and forth between A-10 but mostly Big East. He said, oh, yeah, that's going to be the best tournament. Like, that will be the best of all of them. And it's probably going to be between Big East or Big 10, but the Big East has gotten to a point here where it should send seven. You'd have to have Providence have the floor fall underneath it, or Xavier. Otherwise, the other schools are going there. And I do expect it to be a tremendous, tremendous Big East tournament. Georgetown, St. John's, and DePaul, all 15-15 at this point. But the other seven are tracking to make the NCAAs. And when you can get 70% of your league into the Big Dance, that's a huge year. Credit to the Big East for being pretty good all around and having three viable Final Four contenders.
Creighton, I should point out, as I'm predicting them to lose on Senior Day this weekend, is 15-1 at home this season. The lone loss to Villanova. So they're terrific in that building, and KenPom does project them as a favorite. But it just seems like, I don't know, it just seems like Seton Hall is exactly the type of team that would lose its Senior Day opportunity of securing the outright title and then go actually get it done on the road. They've won in tough road environments this season. I won't be shocked if they do it again, but obviously, you know, I'm playing the underdog
here. Yeah, no, it's certainly possible there. And all those three teams, Nova, you know, the last two, the first three right now, however you want to see it, Seton Hall on the three line, Creighton on the three line, they're going to be, it'll be interesting. You got to figure that, so right now the East, if it was projected out, you'd have no, if they made the Sweet 16, if they held the seeds, you'd have Seton Hall, let's just call Nova the two, Seton Hall the three. Let's say San Diego State, which was it, San Diego State? Able to keep its undefeated season alive after a scare. You were in studio.
I was in studio. They were down at the half, but they started guarding on the perimeter and pulled away from Air Force. It was still a single-digit decision, but they were never in serious trouble in the final few minutes, and they remain the best one-loss undefeated team in America.
You're hedging right there. I'm going all in on these tweets, by the way. I still got people coming after me. Whatever. I almost tweeted at you.
Did you see? You didn't see Jamie Erdahl tonight or yesterday, earlier today.
I had CBS Sports Network on all afternoon, but I'm chasing kids, so I missed what she might have said.
So I guess it was after the San Diego State win, we were going through San Diego State's resume. Like, are they definitely a one seed, you know, no matter what happens in Las Vegas? And by the way, they're not. They could take a loss and slip off of the one line. But as she's introducing, you know, the topic and then getting ready to send it to me, she goes, now, San Diego State does have that one loss. I know you don't like to admit it, but it did happen. And I chuckled.
Nice.
So Jamie was in on it as well.
I love it. Definite big shouts to Jamie Erdahl. She's fantastic. And that's good stuff. What I almost tweeted at you, because I think it was at halftime of the game, and you had Palm talking about San Diego State's resume and all this stuff, and I almost just tweeted to be like, why is Jerry talking about San Diego State having a loss? Just to tweet it at you, just to have some fun there, because the smartasses who don't know the idiotic joke that I continue to perpetuate, that you originated, full credit to GP, that's fun stuff. Anyway, the point I was making is, so this, let's say they hold on to that one seed, San Diego State. They would go to the Garden. Nova would go to the Garden. Seton Hall would go to the Garden, again, if they want to. And then the fourth would probably be Maryland if it can do what it needs to do here. But you might have Maryland or Duke battling. We'll see what happens with that. So that would be compelling for the Big East in that there's the potential. I don't know how likely it is, but you could easily have Seton Hall and Villanova, who played a wonderful game on Wednesday night, meeting again. They're 1-1 the season. They could get a third matchup in the Big East tournament and then potentially a fourth one in the regional finals. So that would be plenty intriguing there. And, yeah, they've got a good shot with all three of those teams breaking through. And then, you know, Providence has been insane. I can't remember if I mentioned these on the previous podcast or not, GP, but Providence won five games against ranked teams in the month of February. That's only happened five times in the history of men's D1 sports in the regular season. I meant D1 sports, D1 basketball, where you've had a team in the span of a month get five wins over five ranked teams. Kind of insane. And Providence has come back from. We talk about UCLA, but this is why I go Cooley over Cronin. You know, I don't know if we need to go down that road again.
Okay, just rank them. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Rank them. Ed Cooley, Mick Cronin, John Wooden.
Ah, that's a tight spot. I'm going to go. See, this is why the people love this podcast. We are addressing the tough topics that need to be addressed. I gotta go Cooley, Cronin, Wooden. And I don't see how there's any argument otherwise at this point.
Listen, I differ with you a little. I'd go Cronin, Cooley, Wooden. But either way, we know we can argue over who's first. We both know who's third. All right, now one more game before we move on.
Yeah.
Marry, kill, or F.
Oh, God. Mick Cronin, Ed Cooley. Hold on. I thought, okay, we hit the top teams. I thought you were going Butler at Xavier when you said one more game. I thought we were like, all right, let's talk about Xavier's at large propositions here. But you took a hard left. Okay, go ahead.
Marry, kill, F, Mick Cronin, Ed Cooley, and John Wooden.
I need you to answer first before I go.
Okay, listen, to me this seems easy. We're killing John Wooden because he's already dead. Nobody heard, you know, we're all used to John Wooden not being here by now, all right?
Uh-huh.
So we don't, it's not a real loss.
Not only have you sanded his name off the court, you've committed murder against John Wooden on this podcast.
Nell's name can stay.
Yes.
She's not the one who lost 8 times in 1966 and missed the NCAA tournament. That's what John did. You can look it up. Nell didn't do that. Nell's name can stay. Mick and Nell Court. So I am.
I know. We've established this. You've killed John Wooden. Continue.
Okay. There's that. So now I'm down to Mary or F. Okay. I think I'm marrying Ed Cooley.
Well, how can you not?
Okay. And then I.
Yeah. So you got to say it.
You know, Mick and I are about the same size.
You look exactly the same. We never talk about it on the podcast. You are practically the coach of UCLA. This is, if you really want to peel back the id, okay, this is where this stems from. When Parrish says Cronin over Wooden, it's because I'm not exaggerating this. From behind, if you were to put Mick Cronin and Gary Parrish in the exact same clothes, you would think they were identical twins. That's where this stems from. You think you're a better coach than John Wooden, and you want to have love with yourself.
That's it. Okay, so there it is. Mary, kill, F. We've got it figured out. We're killing John Wooden, Mary and Ed Cooley, F and Mick Cronin.
I'm in agreement with you. If you want to talk Butler Xavier, we can, or we can just move on. That's fine.
I think we probably need to move on, but the stakes are pretty clear cut for Seton Hall on Saturday. You win at Creighton, you're outright league champs. You lose at Creighton, then you will share the title with at least Creighton and maybe also Villanova. Kansas released its response to its notice of allegations from the NCAA earlier on Thursday. We're going to get into that next. But first, let me tell you about SeatGeek. Do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? Sure seems that way sometimes. It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. As a result, you get a lousy customer experience. But SeatGeek proves there's a better way. With SeatGeek, you can search sports, live music, comedy shows. You can search basically anything. And SeatGeek is going to have the tickets you're looking for all in one place. You might know I'm a Mets fan. I get to Citi Field for games as often as I can, and when I need tickets, the first place I check every single time, SeatGeek. I can have tickets picked out in 2 clicks, so it's quick, simple. I've never, not once, had a problem, which seems to be the norm, because if you look at the App Store, you're going to see more than 50,000 five-star reviews. That shows customer service is a priority with SeatGeek. What SeatGeek does is pull together millions of tickets from all over the web. Then it rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. Then SeatGeek displays them on an interactive seat map and provides guidance. Green dots mean great deals. Red dots are overpriced. And every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can always shop for tickets with confidence. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. In fact, I just used the app a couple weeks ago to buy tickets to Troll Lives. Took my little kids, had a blast. And if you want to try SeatGeek right now, SeatGeek will give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. That's COLLEGEBB. COLLEGEBB. Again, just download the SeatGeek app and use promo code COLLEGEBB for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's promo code COLLEGEBB for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. So Kansas released its response to its notice of allegations from from the NCAA on Thursday. It was just published not too long ago, so I'm going to be honest. It's 307 pages long. I'd be lying if I told you I read all of it. I'd be lying if I told you anybody's read all. Who's read that? Who would read that?
Jesse Newell, of course. Dan Wolkin, I think, is about 74 pages deep into this as we record this podcast. Bless your heart, Dan. Credit to Dennis Dodd, by the way. He did break this little piece of news a couple days in advance when Jeff Long told him that this would indeed be coming out. Why, by the way? People might be wondering, like, why is this happening now? Just so happened Thursday, March 5th, was the deadline day to formally submit the response that Kansas did. And so it's very long, and it is refuting everything that the enforcement group has tried to put upon Kansas, including, I mean, I've seen a few tweets here or there, including Kansas essentially trying to, and this is going to be a hard needle to thread, and we're not going to litigate this much on the podcast, but it is a newsworthy event, so let's just inform the listeners here. They're going to try and needle this thread where the reason why they were able to get whatever leniency they did with the Silvio De Sousa case was because they had to admit that TJ Gastonola was a booster, and now they're going to try and play that differently in this case to avoid serious charges. Because basically what it comes down to is there is an expectation that not only a severe punishment is coming for Kansas and for Bill Self next season, but you could easily have Self facing a season-long ban and Kansas having a postseason ban for 2020-2021 season overall. So we have not had the time to delve into it, but you know, this will wind up being one of the biggest stories of the offseason when we get there, and I do expect us to have a ruling on this with room to spare before the 2020-21 season starts. But 300, GP, like, you talk about lawyering to the max, 307 pages, are you kidding? I don't know if there's, maybe there has been, but I can't imagine there's ever been a response to a single case that's been longer than 307 pages.
Like you said, in short, they're pushing back on everything and conceding absolutely nothing. And I will, and it appears, because I've read what I've read, and then I've seen the clips that people are posting on Twitter. And what it appears is that they're just saying, you can think whatever you want to think. It can look however you want it to look. You can't prove anything. You have to prove it. Now, the NCAA, this is not a court of law. It's not beyond a reasonable doubt. The standard of proof is much lower than that. And I will say, listen, I'm not going to be in the business of predicting how a committee on infractions is going to rule on this stuff, you know, because it's often unpredictable. But I will say Kansas is, some of the points it's trying to make are simply not believable. I mean, they just don't pass the common sense test.
Yeah.
And so I don't, you know, because one part of the response to the notice of allegations is that, according to Kansas officials, and this is where they're rooting part of their argument on this part of the case. The Kansas staff had no knowledge of any recruiting activities by TJ Gastonola. That's just not believable.
It's not believable, and it's even referencing in some of its arguments. Like, for example, there was an exchange between TJ Gastonola, who was the government witness who worked for Adidas, and Bill Self, where Bill Self doesn't incriminate himself, but the nature of the text message exchange, and some of this is redacted, but I know it because I was in the damn courtroom, where TJ Gastonola is, and I will paraphrase here for the sake of clarity and brevity, but he's basically saying, like, Kansas is first in line, Bill Self and everyone get behind him. I won't fail you like I did with DeAndre. And then Self says, you know, and then TJ said,
I've got all of it if you want that.
Yeah, I mean, you can, if you want, yeah, if you want to lay it out, we can certainly lay that out again. I had one more point, but go ahead.
Well, first and foremost, like the response saying the Kansas basketball staff had no knowledge of any recruiting activities by TJ Gastonola. There are literally text messages from Bill to TJ asking, are we good after, you know, are we good with Silvio De Sousa's guardian after Gastonola had told Bill, hey, I just talked to Silvio De Sousa's guardian. And Bill's response is, are we good? That to me suggests knowledge of recruiting activities by TJ Gastonola in the recruitment of a prospective student athlete. You're asking him if we're good. If he's not recruiting for you or involved on some level, how would he know if you're good. And I should, and maybe it goes without saying, but still I'm compelled to point out, I've known Bill Self and his entire staff for a long time, and I like them. And I think they're wonderful at their jobs. They've got the best team in the country right now. But, you know, they got caught. You know, it is what it is. I don't think they're the only staff in America that was benefiting from shoe company help. I don't think they're the only staff in America. But they're the only staff in America that has found themselves in this very specific situation. And the text message combined with just what we know makes it very difficult to believe. I'll take it a step further. Impossible to believe that they really didn't know that TJ Gasnola was involved in any recruiting activities. Right. To the text message exchange you were referencing, TJ Gasnola text Bill Self after Kansas and Adidas had just reached an extension on a long-term deal. And, you know, TJ was thanking Bill for whatever role he played in helping get that extension done. And Bill replied via text that he was happy with Adidas and then wrote, quote, "Just got to get a couple of real guys." And then TJ responded, "In my mind, it's KU, Bill Self. Everyone else fall into line. Too effing bad. That's what's right for Adidas basketball, and I know I'm right. The more you win, have lottery picks, and you're happy. That's how it should work in my mind." And then Bill Self replies, "That's how it works at UNC and Duke." And then TJ replies by saying Kentucky as well. And then he adds, "I promise you, I got this. I've never let you down, except with DeAndre Ayton. LOL, we will get it right." There's no way that text message means that text exchange, there's no way it means anything other than what it so obviously means.
You're right. And then it gets, and then Kansas has got to try and work around the fact that Gasnola admitted to paying off Billy Preston as well. And, you know, it's ultimately doomed in a lot of ways in this case. The other aspect of this that was pointed out by Dan Wetzel is that Kansas is going to try and, here's just a quick graph, and if you want to move on, we can. It says, stated otherwise, according to the enforcement staff, referring to the NCAA's enforcement staff, of course, every corporate sponsor and most, if not all, individuals associated with the sponsor are boosters of every institution with which the sponsor does business. This theory, keyword being theory, if adopted by the panel, would have far-reaching ramifications throughout the membership given the universal use of corporate sponsorships throughout Division I athletics. Moreover, as is explained in the response, under the terms of NCAA legislation, innumerable current and former student athletes would be ineligible due to their pre-enrollment participation in non-scholastic events and non-scholastic teams that were provided financial support by Nike, Under Armour, Adidas, and others. That is the stretch of all stretches. Kansas is essentially trying to say that any, according to what the NCAA is doing, it's saying that players before they get to college playing grassroots basketball for these big shoe company teams are benefiting improperly, and therefore all of these players should be ineligible. That's boiling it way, way, way down, but that's what Kansas is saying there. It's an absurd argument, but it's one that the lawyers thought worthy to put in a 307-page release and send it back to NCAA enforcement.
And it's obviously absurd. And listen, I'm somebody who believes that Nike has spent money on individual families and then used influence created by that money and that relationship to steer maybe not prospects to very specific schools, but certainly to Nike schools. And I think Under Armour's done the exact same thing. I'm not naive to that. And if anybody tries to argue Nike hasn't operated in similar ways to Adidas or Under Armour hasn't operated in similar ways to Adidas, I'll push back on that every time. They might have been smarter, might have been cleaner, less sloppy, but I do believe that they've done similar things. But there's a big difference between building a grassroots program around a five-star prospect and his father and, you know, dropping off a bag of cash to a five-star prospect's mom in a hotel room. Mm-hmm. These are two very different things. And they might lead to the same end result, but they're two very different things. And trying to make them out to be the same is, again, if I were a law, if I were smart enough to be a lawyer and hired to handle this, perhaps I'd make the same type of argument on paper. But to anybody who understands the actual business of the sport, it's laughable.
One more quick thing before we move on. And I know you've talked about this on your radio show this week. Keep in mind going forward, this may or may not be the case with Kansas, but Memphis is in the middle of an NCAA first where you have a complex case unit that is adjudicating this case. It is not the Committee on Infractions that will determine the fate of Memphis's program in regard to the fallout from the James Wiseman situation. And it will be the first one. So it will be the guinea pig, so to speak. Now, the Wiseman thing is so different from the Kansas thing. But what we could have here is how this decision gets made, I don't know. I can't tell you right here, right now, why, you know, the outside case as opposed to the COI. But you could have that with Kansas. And the biggest reason for having this is that, yes, it is the NCAA's way of passing the buck, but passing it to a panel of people that are extremely highly accomplished in law and in dealing with severe cases. Now, their knowledge and able to interpret everything NCAA related, well, they're intelligent people, so I will give them the benefit of the doubt to start. But the biggest factor in all that is that if that winds up being the case later this year, there is no appeals process. So when Memphis gets its ruling later this year, whatever that is, that's it. You're done. You accept it. You have no recourse. And the same thing would be true of Kansas if it doesn't go to the Committee on Infractions. If the Committee on Infractions does rule on this, you can still have a proper appeals process, which as is does not have a high yield of overturns. And if you're wondering why that is, particularly the late NCAA President Miles Brand was actually the one who changed a lot of that legislation in the early 2000s to make it not impossible, but extremely unlikely for anyone to win on appeal.
Since you brought up the Memphis case and put it in the same bucket or at least category as the Kansas case, I am compelled to point out Kansas is trying to argue it did nothing wrong and nobody knew anything wrong was happening because nothing wrong was happening. Like they just really dug their heels down in the response here. Even that school knows you can't play a player with eligibility issues in defiance of the NCAA. Even that school set down Billy Preston and set down Silvio D'Souza when eligibility concerns were made aware to them. And so there are still some Memphis fans and even some Memphis media members who act like Memphis didn't do anything wrong here and that the NCAA is just picking on poor little Memphis. But when you stupidly, and I use that word intentionally, stupidly play James Wiseman after they have told you there are real eligibility concerns, well, then you open the door to this. You get what you get. And it sucks because the fan base was really fired up for the Penny Hardaway era. And now the season has been a disaster because the best player quit and the third best player got hurt. And now you've got an NCAA cloud hanging over your program that could impact recruiting and all sorts of other things going forward. But like the second they put James Wiseman on the court in defiance of the NCAA, they open themselves up to exactly what they're dealing with now. And it is shameful and embarrassing that the people in charge at that school didn't realize it in real time because lots of smart people, and I'm not even calling myself smart, but like lots of people, myself included in that group, understood exactly what they were doing. The fact that they didn't seem to understand or care, really, really failure in leadership.
Last thing on Kansas, for those who are wondering like, okay, well, this is happening, you know, beginning of March, like when are we going to hear stuff next? It will be a while. So this will be the last thing we'll have on this for months. The only things related to it you'll hear about or will enter into your orbit as a, you know, an observer or just receiver of college basketball content in general is as Kansas, if it does make deep runs into the NCAA tournament, this stuff will be more and more talked about. And recently, even GP on the CBS Sports Network set for Facebook Watch, he had a commentary about how it would be beautifully awkward if we did, in fact, have yet another example of an NCAA coach being handed a trophy by Mark Emmert in the midst of his program being caught up in the midst of a huge NCAA scandal.
The SEC race is settled, but the league is looking a little suspect right now. We're going to get into that next. But first, check this out.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So the SEC regular season race is settled. Kentucky is your outright champs. We've known that for a little while. Congrats to the Wildcats. Go Big Blue. But the league is looking suspect right now. Our friend Dan Walken from USA Today pointed out Thursday morning, every SEC team, including Kentucky, is now 30th or worse at KenPom right now. Let me run you through this. It's pretty interesting. So that means there's 29 teams ahead of the highest ranked SEC team right now, according to KenPom, as of Thursday night. Kentucky's 30th. So there's 29 teams in front of the best SEC team. There are 9 in the top 29 from the Big Ten. The Big Ten has 9 of the top 29. The Big East has 5 of the top 29. The Big 12 has 4 of the top 29. The Pac-12 has 3. ACC has 3. West Coast Conference has 2. American has 1. Mountain West has 1. A-10 has 1. Is that concerning to you, Norlander? Or let me ask an even simpler question. Does the SEC have any good teams?
Yeah, Kentucky's a good team. I think that Auburn's a good team. Now, Auburn is rightfully slipping here because it's had a lot of overtime wins and a lot of very close wins. In fact, I'll bring it up right now. Auburn was first in luck at KenPom for much of the season. It slipped down because of its losses. It's actually 7th. How about that? Virginia, 8th in luck. No other teams that project into the NCAA tournament except for Texas at 12 are in the top 20. And luck is just what you think it is. It's just it takes your game results and what was expected to be, and if it's close, it kind of just shows you how much more fortunate you were to wind up on the better end of that. But I do think that Kentucky and Auburn are both really good, especially like when you Isaac Okoro is he's a terrific top 12 to 15 level kind of freshman. The Kentucky L is problematic significantly to Tennessee just because it was stunning the way it happened. And even Calipari said it earlier today, I think in a media call or availability in some form. I don't have the exactly off the top of my head, but he said going into halftime, I was thinking that we were like a Final Four team. And then at the end of the game, I'm just like completely lost. He tweeted it. That's what it was. He said, I'm focused on that first 20 minutes and, you know, getting my guys to continue to be that. But I won't ramble here, GP, or at least I'll try not to. Kentucky, to me, is a very good team, and I would still consider bracket unseen putting Kentucky into the Final Four if you're going to tell me Ashton Hagans can be a lot better than he was against Tennessee.
I agree with you. I don't think there are 29 teams actually better than Kentucky, even if there are 29 teams ranked ahead of Kentucky at KenPom. But it is wild. If you took Kentucky, threw it in the Big Ten, and ranked teams in that league based on adjusted efficiency margin, Kentucky would be 10th in the Big Ten, behind Michigan State, Maryland, Wisconsin, Penn State, Iowa, Ohio State, Rutgers, Michigan, and Purdue. So, like, whatever that means. Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Will the SEC have multiple teams in the Sweet 16?
I will say no. I will say because of the nature of the tournament, I'll put my wager on only one. But I will, if you set the over-under at 0.5, I'm going over. 1.5, I'm going under. You with me on that, or are you going to go zero?
I would not go zero. I just think somebody's going to get in, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Somebody's going to win 2 games. I would assume Kentucky. But, like, if it's not Kentucky, it could be Auburn. Like, it could be Arkansas getting hot. I don't know.
They're
but
I
would
hit,
I,
yeah.
I would actually say if you put the over-under at 1.5, I'd still take the over. I think the SEC will have at least 2 of the 16 Sweet 16 teams. But I don't have any. What I would assume, it'll be Kentucky and somebody else. I don't know who.
Quick passing thought on the Big Ten, because I happened to talk to two Big Ten coaches in the past 24 hours, one head coach, one assistant, and both just brought up they were like, we are so ready to get the hell out of this league, like just to play any other team. Just it's been an unreal grind, and every coach always says, like, I can't wait to get out of my league. We got a tough league. They're like, I got it. It's like when you're at the party at, like, you know, 2:20 in the morning. You're like, I got to get the hell out of here, man. That's what the thought is within that league. And I will be interested to see how many Big Ten teams can wind up finding success, because you're going to have a log jam on that 5-9 line overall. Real quick, though, let me just scoot back to the SEC just to give listeners an idea here of where the teams are, like, trending toward. I'd say Kentucky, my guess is Kentucky will wind up being a 4. Auburn, I think, will be a 5. That's my best guess. LSU is firmly in the tournament, but I don't know which direction it's going. It doesn't have a good defense whatsoever. The defense is horrendous. So I think you're going to have a big gap between those two and everyone else. I think between LSU and Florida, one of those two teams will be in the 8-9 game, and then the other one, like, Florida's got a great opportunity at home against Kentucky this weekend, GP. And then I'd say the other one might slip down to a 10, and that's where we're at. Then you've got this jam where you've got Arkansas, Mississippi State trying to break through, see if they can get there. But it could be just a 4-bid league this season. So it's light on teams. I think that's all it's going to get. Arkansas still got a shot, but I don't know. That might be it at this point.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2 SEC teams in the Sweet 16, Kentucky and somebody else. Remember, Arkansas, they don't jump off the page on you, but that's a good team with Isaiah Joe in the lineup.
It is.
The record is I think they went 1-5 without him. So, you know, their resume would look much better if he never got hurt. Now, that is something that happened. You can't pretend it didn't. But I do think once they get in the tournament, they'll probably be better than what their seed suggests, because they're better than what the resume suggests when they are at full strength. Do you want to go to the Final Four and 1?
Let's do it. What do you her record is this? 45-39-1 for me.
45. Hold on. 45.
First of all, I tell you this every week. I figure you're putting it into some sort of spreadsheet or Google Doc.
I quit caring. Like, you could even be lying to me right now. I don't even care.
I would never do that. 45-39-1 for me. 36-48-1 for you. Have had a couple people tweet at me saying, loving GP's picks because I'm fading them, and I'm coming up positive every week. So you're doing a service for the people.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I don't even gamble on anything anymore. I just stopped because I honestly stopped. I don't have the time. I don't even have time to enjoy gambling anymore. But thank God I stopped, because I'd have to get a 7th job to support my gambling habit the way these stupid picks are going. All right, you ready?
Let's do it.
I picked out games.
Let's do it.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern, number 6 Kentucky at Florida. Inside Walsh Anderson Arena. You can watch it on CBS. It's America's most watched network. It's the network of stars. Florida is -4. Do you know Walsh Anderson Arena?
You're getting worse with these names, man. I just don't know what to say.
Worse?
Yeah, it's not good.
I had the Herb Pope Center earlier.
I'm giving you credit. I'm giving you credit for Herb Pope.
Herb Pope is currently serving a 48-month sentence for a bank robbery.
Well, I didn't realize. Okay, so I guess what we're learning here is the guys who actually are of questionable character are the ones that are getting these arenas now.
Those are the ones I'm drawn to.
I was personally hoping for. All right, so all right, whatever. You get the arenas. I'm going to name the court. There are a ton.
Herb Pope, let me make sure you understand what happened.
Okay.
6'9", former famous high school basketball player, who then went to Seton Hall, Herb Pope, robbed a bank basically in his hometown. Like, how many 6'9" people are there just robbing? Like he robbed the bank, and everybody was like, what'd the suspect look like? And they were like, looked like Herb Pope. It's just over with. He had no chance. So did we get a description of the suspect? Yes, it was Herb Pope, the basketball player. He was 6'9", robbing a bank.
Oh, man.
He didn't think it through. Like, if you're going to be 6'9", you should probably try to rob a bank somewhere other than your hometown where you were a famous basketball player.
there, by the way, there can only be, well, there can be many choices. Florida has many, but I'm going to give the court honors to one, Kenny Boynton.
Dude, I almost named it Kenny Boynton.
Oh, look at us. Look at us. See, that's how you know. Kenny Boynton court.
Walsh, okay. Do you remember Walsh Anderson?
No, I thought you were going to go Matt Walsh.
Matt Walsh.
Oh, okay.
And Lauren Anderson.
No, I'm lost.
Matt Walsh. This story doesn't get enough attention.
I know, okay. Matt Walsh. I'm thrilled with the Matt Walsh. Underrated, really good college passer, but go ahead with the story.
I wish this story, like, happened in 2020. We'd be all over. We'd do entire podcasts about it. Matt Walsh was a sophomore at Florida dating Lauren Anderson, who was a legit Playboy centerfold.
While in college.
Yeah, yes. He was, like, playing for Billy Donovan, and she was in Playboy, centerfold. Not just in it, but she was the centerfold. He was a sophomore in college. That's as good as it gets.
That's...
Google Matt Walsh, Lauren Anderson. Pops right up.
Okay, fair enough. Can I get Miss Anderson into the No Context Ion College Basketball Podcast preview tease? That might be a little too. I don't know if I can pull that off.
Let me see if we can find a picture where she's got her clothes on.
I don't know if I can do that. While you go ahead and research that, I am going to take Florida -4. I don't trust this team. I will take Kentucky as a dog on the road to cover that number.
Most of her pictures, she does not have clothes on.
All right.
She does not like to wear clothes very much, it appears.
I'm gonna tease Matt Walsh instead. I have already made the decision.
Now, you can find one. There are pictures where she doesn't have clothes.
Hell no. I want Matt Walsh in that teaser. I want Matt Walsh. It's been done.
You can get the actual Playboy cover where she does have clothes on. She was on the cover of Playboy.
All right. There we go.
Matt Walsh, my man.
You make the call. Should I put Matt Walsh or the Playboy cover in the teaser?
Playboy cover, always.
Oh, man.
That's more intriguing. It's more intriguing. It would
all
make
right.
me
send
listen.
Send me the photo, and I'll put it. People are going to be like, what? They're going to finally get to this part of the podcast and discover. But okay.
Now, imagine going to a podcast thinking you're looking for Lauren Anderson, the Playboy model, and you end up in a game of Mary Kill F with Mick Cronin, Rick Cooley, and John Wooden. That's the part that's going to get us fired.
It's been a winding road to this point of the pod. I'm taking Kentucky +4. Who are you taking?
I'm taking Kentucky +4. Florida has 0 wins over top 40 KenPom teams this season. Gators are 0-5 against top 40 KenPom. I can't trust them. By the way, because I get asked every once in a while, so what happened? Or, you had them in the top 10. Here's the truth. If I went back and based on the stuff we had available to us in the preseason to rank teams, I'd put Florida in the top 10 again. They brought back good pieces. They had the best grad transfer on the market. And then they added 2 5-star freshmen who, one of them at least was a projected lottery pick. Like, that's on paper, that's top 10 stuff. But listen, it's more complex than what I'm about to say, but go look at what their 5-star freshmen have done. They've just been very average. Yep. I mean, you look at the freshmen every week. They're just guys.
They are just guys. Yeah.
And so once your 5-star freshmen don't perform at the level that 5-star freshmen are expected to perform, well, that's how you go from being a top 10 team to, a middle of the bracket team, which is what Florida seems to be.
I agree. All right. What do you got for game 2?
Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Number 1 Kansas at Texas Tech inside Darvin Ham Arena.
All right.
You can watch it on ESPN. KenPom's got it Kansas -4.
Texas Tech has a sneaky, shaky resume.
Dude, I didn't understand. Last week they were ranked, and I would get Texas Tech fans like tweeting me. Like, hey, what? So you're going to be the only person not to rank Texas Tech? And I was like, I think I looked at Texas Tech's body of work, and I just was like, didn't even have it on my radar. So I went back and looked again. It's a bad body of work. I don't know how they were ranked in the AP poll. They're like a very they're a bubble team right now, as far as I'm concerned. A
bubble team, unquestionably. They have, by the way, this game is going to be played on Andre Emmett Court. RIP Andre Emmett. So Palm informed me of this. I'm losing track. I hope I'm not repeating myself on the podcast, but I host another podcast.
It doesn't even matter. I don't think.
HQ, whatever. So here's what Palm told me. So right now, Texas Tech is They are 10-12 aggregate in quad 1, 2, and 3. Okay, so two games under 500. I think he said that there's like one team ever in the past like 25 years that's gotten an at-large with being two games under 500 in quad 1, 2, and 3. But he is retro, because the quads have only existed for a few years here. So he retrofits it so that, and this is obviously isn't direct correlation, but back in the day it was RPI top 50, RPI top 100, and then RPI top 200. So if you were, say, 10-12 against those teams, in those instances you weren't going to get an at-large bid. Texas Tech still rates well in the net, but it's got some work to do. And if it loses to Kansas, I'm of the belief it needs two in the Big 12 tournament to feel good. So they need a big showing. Chris Beard has got to come up big. But yes, the resume is definitely thin. Best wins, SMU. No, that's not it. I'm in the wrong year. Hold on, buddy. They beat Louisville. I was at the game. They beat Louisville handily. That's by far the best win. And they have against West Virginia on their home floor.
At Texas.
What else you want from me? That's it. It's not nothing, but it's not great. I'm going to take, you know, Kansas is trying to get the standalone. It's already got the Big 12 regular season championship for the 15th time in 16 years. I'll take Texas Tech. I'm not confident in this at all, but why not? I will take Texas Tech to cover this game. I don't know if it'll win, but they're getting four. Give me the Red Raiders.
Okay, I'll take Kansas -4 then, whatever. But one thing, you know, this is obviously a great coaching match.
Yeah.
A guy who's already a Hall of Famer against a guy who's one of the real difference makers on the sideline, much smaller career so far as a Division I head coach, but Chris Beard is undeniably awesome. And it was interesting, I thought, a few weeks ago, I was talking to Adrian Wojnarowski, our friend from ESPN, the greatest NBA insider in the whole wide world. And I was just talking to him about just sort of random, like, you know, people keep talking about Bill Self going to the NBA or Jay Wright going to the NBA. Who is the guy, when you talk to NBA people, is there somebody that they, you know, say, hey, this guy's on our radar. We might like to hire, you know, we're interested. Like, we could see this guy working in our league someday. And the first name Woj said was Chris Beard. Said when NBA people go through Lubbock to see Jamias Ramsey or whomever else, they walk out of there going, that guy might be the best basketball coach in college basketball.
Well, okay. I think that his natural disposition, I think it would work in the NBA. I wonder if he'd want to do it. I mean, you know, the paycheck coming, I'm sure. Like, that would be interesting. Okay. Heard it here first. I could see it.
Yeah, I don't know many people who wouldn't want to do it if given the opportunity and a good situation, because it really is, it's an easier lifestyle. I don't know if it's an easier job, right, but it is an easier lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. That would be intriguing there. All right, so we split on that one. What do you got for game three?
Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, number 10 Louisville at number 22 Virginia, inside Austin Nichols Arena. You can watch it on ESPN. KenPom's got it, Louisville -1.
Ville -1. Okay. I just got a funny text, but I can't read it on the show. I'm surprised at that number. I didn't think that it would be.
Okay, maybe I messed it up.
No, you're probably right, but I'm just surprised at the number. First of all, Tony Bennett's got Virginia Cavaliers won back of the frickin' ACC regular season championship. Like, what are we doing here? This is stupid. Jay Huff, by the way, who I was insistent be on our preseason top 101 list, was like a non-factor for 80% of the season, and then suddenly just has become a beast. He scored Virginia's first 17 points, by the way. Virginia won against Miami 46-44.
So stupid.
I love it. I love the fact that Tony Bennett wins a national championship and then Virginia just becomes the most Virginia it can possibly be there. It has not lost since it lost to Louisville. Not even a trivia time here. I'll just throw the nugget. Louisville has never defeated Virginia twice in the same season. But except for that Louisville loss, Virginia has won all of its games dating back to January 20th here. It needs to beat Louisville, and it needs Florida State to lose at home, which isn't going to happen this weekend because Florida State is a very good team playing a terrible Boston College team. But if Virginia beat Louisville and if Florida State lost at home to Boston College, it's not inconceivable. Virginia would actually finish again at the top of the ACC standings. That would be hilarious. We might even have to lead the pod if that happened, but I don't think it's going to happen, and I don't think that Louisville is going to beat Virginia twice in the same season. Give me the Wahoos to win and to bump that seed even higher, man. They're creeping up and creeping up and creeping up.
Virginia, 7-game winning streak, like you mentioned. Ken Pomeroy tweeted this, I guess it was Wednesday night, after the low-scoring victory over Miami. The 7-game winning streak, Virginia has won those games by a total of 26 points. It is the lowest point total differential for a team on a 7-game winning streak. It ties for the lowest in modern history.
That's why I love Pom, because that's you got to want to find that stat. And we have no means of getting it. But it also speaks to why Virginia's so high in luck, as I mentioned earlier this season.
Right.
And why, for as much as we will praise Tony Bennett for the job he's done to get this team safely into the NCAA tournament, you can only trust Virginia as far as you can throw them this year in the big bracket. I don't know where I'll put them. They are, without a doubt, a team that is going to thrive or flame out based on the matchups they get in the bracket.
The 7 wins, here's how it breaks down. They got a 1-point win over Notre Dame, 3 2-point wins, one over North Carolina, one over Duke, one over Miami, 2 3-point wins, one over Pitt, one over Virginia Tech, and then a 13-point win over Boston College. Poor Boston College. Dude, if Virginia blows you out, it's just time to call it. It's over with.
it very much is. Okay, so I'm taking the Wahoos. Who are you taking?
Taking Virginia inside Austin Nichols Arena.
Got to do it. I feel like you changed it since the last one, but that's okay.
No, you know, John Paul Jones Arena?
Yeah. No, you had a different name last time, I thought.
Yeah, John Paul Jones is a Memphian.
Oh, well, there we go. Also, just like, an incredible bass player.
And an incredible bass player. Austin Nichols, also a Memphian, who played a grand total of one game for Virginia before being dismissed from the program.
It's just terrible.
Can you imagine transferring Virginia, sitting out a year, playing one game, getting kicked off?
I know. But he did dodge the UMBC debacle. So
yeah, he wasn't a part of that. You can't blame him for that.
You can't blame him, and you can't blame DeAndre Hunter. By the way, this is Ty Jerome Court. Don't think I forgot, Virginia fans. Okay, game four, who you got?
It was Ralph Sampson Arena because he was a 3-time All-American, just like Bill Walton.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yes. We got to stick
with
that.
I'd rather go with the guy who played one game before getting kicked off. It's Austin Nichols Arena. Ty Jerome Court inside Austin Nichols Arena. Sunday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, number 19 Ohio State at number 16 Michigan State inside the Neitzel Center. You can watch it on CBS. It's America's most watched network. It's the network of stars.
Let me guess the line. Hold on. Let me guess it. I'll say 3.
Michigan State -5, according to Ken Pom.
Okay. Both these teams are in the top 10. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm going to say Michigan State, if I'm remembering right, Michigan State 6 and Ohio State 9?
I think you're just trying to say 6-9.
Well, maybe, but was that a nice guess or what? Am I right?
I don't. What did you ask me? I've got the entire New York City is getting arrested right now. So.
Okay.
It's just sirens nonstop. That's the thing about spending so much time right in the middle of the city. Like, you don't even hear these sirens, like, under normal circumstances. But because I've got this headset on, the sirens go into the mic and then directly into my ears.
Yes.
So it's
but
really
I didn't
loud.
Hear it, so I don't think it came out the pod. That'll actually sometimes happen because I happen to live about a mile from one of the local volunteer fire departments. And so because I'm on, like, a main valve in my town, we have definitely had multiple podcasts this season. First of all, Barish is standing up in the dark again in a plain white t-shirt, and I can see a little belly popping out. Like, what?
I was stretching and trying to see if I could figure out where the fire is.
What? This all started because I asked you. I'm gonna look up the damn rankings myself. Hold on.
Yeah. What did
it's,
you?
It's New York City and it's sirens. Like, there's nothing unusual about it. Like, you're
no, you're not listening to what I'm telling you. There's nothing unusual about it except that the sirens are currently hitting my microphone and then shooting directly into my ears because my headphones are turned up very loud so I can hear you.
Oh,
so
man.
They sound very loud. Under normal circumstances, I wouldn't even notice them, but because they're so loud directly in my ears, I notice them. You want to know the truth? Here, once you spend this much time in the city, you don't notice sirens anymore. All of that just sort of, you don't hear it anymore.
Right.
You know what you hear? Silence. There was a time, maybe last year or a year before, a blizzard was coming through. Turned out not to be nearly as bad as they thought, but they thought it was going to be the worst thing ever. And they closed all the streets in Manhattan. Like, there was no cars on the street. So you, like, wake up in the middle of the night and you hear nothing. And that's what was weird, hearing nothing. Because in New York, you're constantly hearing everything, including sirens.
I definitely hear what you're saying there, pun intended. So Michigan State's 7, Ohio State is 8 in KenPom's rankings. So Ohio State got a nice, comfortable pull-away win late on Thursday night against a good Illinois team. Chris Holtman's squad has won 4 straight games, got it at home against Maryland. Obviously, they won at Pinnacle Bank Arena because everyone does, and then won at home over Michigan and now Illinois. And they are coming back into form here. It'll be tough to get the win on the weekend, but they started out hot. They were the number one team when the net debuted for the second straight season back in December. But I have to ride. I think you got to be with me here. Michigan State -5 on Cassius Winston's senior night. I can easily see it being a close game. This is a very compelling game, a really good game on Saturday. But I'm going to ride with Sparty and MSU.
I am too. And by the way, Maryland also enters the weekend 13-6. They host Michigan. And then because Illinois lost, it's only a 3-way tie at the top. Wisconsin 13-6. They're at Indiana. Prediction: Michigan State and Maryland are co-Big Ten champs when we wake up on Monday morning. Because I'm like you, I'm not picking against a Cassius Winston on Senior Day.
Yeah.
And it'll be pretty remarkable in a season in which Michigan State opened with a loss to Kentucky, and then fell to 3-2 with a loss to Virginia Tech. And then fell to 5-3 with a blowout loss at home to Duke. They still were able to pull it together and win a Big Ten title. That's where we're that's the direction we're headed right now.
You are correct. All right. So we agree on that. So before I get to the 5th game, we do have automatic bids coming out this weekend. So just as a primer reminder for the listeners, we got 2 Saturday, 3 Sunday. And there are different benchmarks that always make it feel like March has arrived. For me, a lot of it was really that Josh Spidell snack stuff on Tuesday. But when you do have those championship games and the automatic bids going out, like that's when you get the feel goodies coming out. So weirdly enough, and GP, I don't know maybe if you heard it in studio today or this week as to why this is. I don't have the information offhand, but the Mountain West bumped up its tournament schedule this season. So the championship game is going to be played on CBS on Saturday. But do we know why exactly the Mountain West opted to do that?
I would assume the answer is no. I don't know why.
Okay.
I would assume somebody said, do you want to play on big CBS?
I got to believe it, right? And you take that absolutely if you're the Mountain West.
Sure.
There's no doubt about it. So they get on big CBS. They will be handing out the bid. And then as always, the Ohio Valley is that first small league that gets the automatic bid handed out. That'll be on ESPN2 on Saturday night. And what's interesting about the Valley is this. It's got three teams that I truly believe are capable of winning an NCAA tournament game, but only one team's going to get in. They don't have a two-bid situation going on. So you got Belmont post-Rick Bird. Still got the Rick Bird juice going, which is fantastic.
Tell me more about this Rick Bird juice.
I'll have to tell you offline. You got Murray State getting potentially back to the tournament a year after post-Jaw, and they're still really good again. Shouts to Matt McMahon. He is certainly I don't know how many big jobs are going to open, but he should get a good hard look. I think he's done a great job there in a long line of successful Murray State coaches. It's almost like Xavier to the South, if you will, at a mid-major level. And then Austin Peay is the team that I think I'd want to see in the tournament more than anyone else because, one, the school just embraces Let's Go Peay, have for decades, going back to Fly Williams. But they have a freshman named Jordan Adams who is awesome. And I mean awesome, like he's going to be the next really, really good point guard to get potentially. I think he will get drafted out of the league like Ja did. He's not going to be a second pick. He's not going to be Ja Morant, but he's really, really good. He initially committed to Baylor. And then they have Terry Taylor, who is putting up like – career numbers that have been done by only 10 players ever. So Austin is a team to keep an eye on. Those two are on Saturday. Sunday on ESPN, you'll have the Atlantic Sun title game between Lipscomb and Liberty. The Big South will play out on Sunday as well on ESPN. And then, as always, the Sunday before Selection Sunday, we will have Arch Madness and its title game on Sunday afternoon. The semis will broadcast on CBS Sports Network on Saturday for the Missouri Valley Championship. So keep an eye on that. We'll have five teams in the tournament when we get back to podcasting on Sunday night. Now, as for my game, everything is stacked on Saturday. I'm gonna dodge Sunday altogether. If there's anything notable, we'll get to it. But it's mostly American and Big Ten games. I think after examining all of this, there's a lot of good ones. I want to give love to a team that hasn't really gotten much this season. But I did not anticipate on you picking Ville, Virginia there, GP. I'm going to go
Austin Nichols Arena.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. I'm going to go with the CBS game. It's America's most watched network. It's the network of stars. And this is a 3:15 tip on Saturday. So as you watch this, if you watch it on your phone or whatever, I'll be in studio for CBS Sports HQ. I will literally be previewing, talking at halftime and postgame of this game, in addition to Kentucky, Florida, and all that's going on. You got UCLA, USC, both teams trying to get into this damn awesome 68-team tournament. Because, GP, you got to somehow put 68 teams into the field.
I heard that.
I haven't heard you talk about that on CBS Sports Network yet.
Well, the thing people don't realize is that we got to put 68 teams in this thing. And then the other thing that people don't understand is that you got to have four number one seeds. And so you can keep talking about, well, what if Kansas loses to Texas Tech and then Kansas loses in the Big 12 tournament? Well, we still got to have four number one seeds, and I don't think you're going to be able to find four with better resumes than Bill Self's Kansas Jayhawks.
You're right. So 3:15 on Saturday, UCLA inside.
Uh-huh.
You're going to be proud of me for this because I feel like it's who you'd pick. O.J. Mayo inside the O.J. Mayo Center.
O.J. Mayo Center's fine.
Yeah, O.J. Mayo Center.
Could go D'Anthony Melton Center. That's my favorite guy.
You could. He can have the court. You want to give him the court?
D'Anthony Melton Court. He deserves that.
He does. He actually, you know what? He does. Somebody actually get a piece of the court and deliver it to D'Anthony Melton for us, please. Try and get that done. You have, somewhat surprisingly, USC as a home 6-point favorite over your Mick Cronin Bruins. Who are you taking?
Dude.
Dude,
that is disrespectful.
Oh, okay.
That is the most disrespectful thing I've ever heard. Making Mick Cronin a 6-point underdog?
I think John Wooden's coaching this team.
Inside the O.J. Mayo Center? No. Under no circumstances. UCLA plus 6? UCLA, Pac-12 champs.
They will indeed be that if they are able to get a win here. It is a big week for the Pac-12. They have seven teams in the mix. UCLA, Oregon, Arizona State, Colorado, USC, Arizona, and Stanford all in the mix to get into the field. We'll see how things shake out this weekend. And then with the league tournament next week, provided the coronavirus doesn't prevent people from attending it. I will take USC to cover only because you called it disrespectful. I have to play the odds in this instance here. I don't feel good about it, but I'm going to ride the Trojans and that horse there. So we have agreement on Kentucky. We have agreement on Michigan State, and we have agreement on Virginia. We split on I've got Red Raiders, you've got Jayhawks, I've got Trojans, you've got Bruins.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Lauren Anderson. Google her if you need to. Please go subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcasts. Rated favorably. 5 stars. Nice comments. That's all I've ever asked. And we're going to talk to you again. Honestly, we're not sure. We're not sure when we're going to talk to you again. We think I'm traveling Sunday, and we probably can't record before Michigan State. Perhaps secures a Big Ten title on Cassius Winston Senior Day. So this might be a situation where we have to record on Monday morning, but we'll let you know. Hey, you'll be the first to know. We'll talk to you again soon, whatever that means. Till then, take care.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.